This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
When I go home late at night, this is a song that I really like to sing right now, so I'll play it for you. It's called My Old Man.
On the 6 yard line, sends across it, it's knocked away. Only as far as the Domer again. Here's the ball into Akadja. It's 2-1. A Domer, the provider. Akadja gets a Bobby's man on the fast stick.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, the editor of myoldmansaid.com. First of all, a big thanks to everybody who voted for myself and My Old Man Said as one of the nominees in the 2016 Football Supporters Federation Awards, which take place on Monday the 5th of December at the St Pancras Renaissance Hotel in London. Much appreciated. We're in the Blogger of the Year category, which used to be a judging panel that voted on that, and this is the first time it's a public vote. My money's on Copper 90, with 2 million Facebook followers and over 1 million YouTube subscribers. But I think the FSF have kind of got their categories a bit messed up there. But anyway, that's where my money is. But, you know, you never know. Earlier in the week, I had the good fortune as part of the fan consultation group to meet Villa's new technical director, Steve Round, who was definitely probably one of the best value people we've spoken to, I've spoken to at Villa in the last few years. You may remember that he actually turned down a chance to be Remy Gard's assistant manager, and he actually said that he didn't have any belief in the manager or the owner at the time. But also, you know, he was looking to go in a different direction, which this technical director role facilitates. So as well as the Brighton and Cardiff games, and I went down to Brighton for that, and it was a good trip, as Brighton tends to be. We'll also on the podcast, we'll have a player focus on Ashley Westwood, and we'll also have the usuals like Yedinak's Jungle and Five Reasons to Be Cheerful, and also sprinkle a few listener questions throughout the show. And before we get cracking, and Dan Rogers of the Villa Underground joins me, if you want to support us, head over to myoldmansaid.com and check out Patreon on the menu bar, and you can sign up there and support us, and it'll be much appreciated. This time we're not at Villa Park, we are, as per usual, talking Villa in the early hours of the night. So, let's get on with the show. And joining me on this week's episode, Dan Rogers from the Villa Underground. Welcome, Dan.
Hello there.
So, have you finished freezing your balls off after today's trip to Villa Park?
Yep, frozen my Yedinaks off. They are
now inverted into my body. It wasn't pretty, but we take the win.
So, you know, I kind of like winter games, do you? I mean, yeah, yeah. Sometimes I have to sneak a hip flask in there, but that's more for away games, a little bit of rum.
Warms the old cockles.
Well, you know, if the game's crap, and to quote Danny Murphy, dull, which I think is in his rights of saying that, I think it's just the Birmingham Mail trying to create... Ian Holloway's now got a job, so they can't run stories on his punditry, so they need a replacement.
Yeah, it's such a non-story, such a non-story. I was just going to say, you probably would need the booze, because it wasn't, though we won today, it wasn't a great game, it was ugly football, wasn't it? It was ugly winter championship.
Well, we'll get into the game in a minute. Let's just go through the points. Well, we haven't actually done a podcast for a couple of weeks now, but let's stick to the recent news points. Stephen Seagal's become a Russian citizen. He's got his Russian passport.
Why not? That's not news.
It's funny, though.
Fucking hell.
Made me laugh. Well, Tony Zai is back in town, and he was definitely been schmoozing around local council and MPs. I think, obviously, fighting this HS2 train link that's going to go through Bodymore Heath, which is causing a bit of a problem. I met Steve Round, the Villa Technical Director, at the start of the week, and he was saying that was one of the first things on his kind of dance card when he got here. He found himself tackling that issue. And he's also signed some kind of business... Sorry, what was the agreement that you mentioned with a Chinese housing developer?
Oh, it's interesting. Tony...
I know nothing.
No, it's just interesting that Dr. Tony's into his smart cities and wanting to redevelop in and around, I guess, Villa Park, or the land that Villa owns. And the city in September signed a £2 billion agreement with a Chinese housing developer. So, very interesting.
Yeah, there was a few local MPs and councillors at the game against Cardiff, all tweeting pictures with Tony.
Well, he's met with the head of the council a couple of times, hasn't he, now? So he's clearly making his contacts there and keeping them happy. Yeah, but it's not, maybe they're part of the initiative to sit on his lap or in his box. I'm not quite sure how the...
Sit with Zai.
Yeah. How does that work? Is it you get to...
I don't know, but I saw what you put on Twitter, and I think you should be banned from the club, personally. I think you should have your season ticket revoked.
No. I had it in writing that the people who went over the last 5 years are now life members. We're lifers.
Anyway, on the pitch, Brucey Bonus's run continues unbeaten, and was it now 15 out of 21 points? That's pretty darn good in terms of turning the fortunes of this club around, and we will get onto that in a bit. And the other thing is, old Mr. Lambert, ghost of the past, took over at Wolves, and with Birmingham Mail saying he was the best man possible for the job, have they not read their own content for the last 3 or so years? But Lambert, anyway, still looking for that first win, and they got beat at home against Sheffield Wednesday and remain winless.
Fourth bottom now as well.
Yeah, doesn't look good there. And obviously they've got new Chinese owners and a bit of cash. And Lambert was talking about the playoff picture and the promotion as a viable option for Wolves, but I think he really should be concentrating on that relegation battle, which he became a specialist during his time at Villa. Anyway, let's move on to the game. What did you think while you were freezing your Jedinex off at the performance today overall?
I thought given that Warnock set them up to absolutely spoil everything, and, you know, they came just to be confrontational and disruptive, I thought we played okay. We stuck to our guns, and I thought we ran out deserved winners in the end.
Yeah, they tested us early doors with the old, how do I describe that throw?
The Delap. I always think it was like a Delap.
The Delap.
I read about
that, so I was expecting it. Yeah. But we weren't. It was strange, that, because I'm sure, I can't remember if Steve Bruce mentioned it in a pre-match interview, but they almost prospered early doors off that little trick.
Yeah, in the first few seconds. It's always weird with that sort of long throw in that's essentially a corner, how defenders suddenly become, and goalkeepers, unable to deal with it because it's been thrown. I the ball doesn't.
Yeah, it's got this like flat trajectory. And that kind of, for some physics reason, which I'm sure if we've got any listeners who have a degree in physics would probably be able to explain it better. I'm sure most of you have got degrees in something out there. Mm. Well, maybe not. The upshot is Aston Villa matched Cardiff physically. I would say pretty well. I mean, there's been a few eyebrows raised at Villa's kind of midfield in the past, and also the defence folding under pressure. But we look pretty solid now under Bruce. I would venture to say
it works quite well as a three. And I mean, I know Baker went off half time, but you know, Chester puts himself about, Baker's in there, and you've got Jedinak sort of anchored into that central spot, just marauding around like some sort of barbarian.
Kind of like a midfield sweeper, isn't he? Like a sweeper that plays in front of the centre-backs.
Well, anything that's in the air and anything that's sort of played in that, let's say, that triangle in front of the defence, he's never more than 5 or 6 yards away, is he?
No, exactly. And that was, I think, when he came to Villa, it was essentially, we had a listener, comment a few weeks ago, Villa fans were slating Jedinak, now he's the best thing since sliced bread, so fickle, get behind the boys. Well, there were question marks over Jedinak's performance at the start, and fickle is, you know, you tell it as you see it. People see Jedinak playing crap, they're going to say he's playing crap. It's not, you know, it's simple as that. But he was, he seemed off the pace in the first few games. Yeah. But I think that was about establishing amongst the midfielders their actual roles, and when Bruce came in, I think he kind of laid that down a bit more, let's say a bit more distinctly than RDM did.
He's got a clear role in the team, hasn't he now? And that's, you could see immediately, I'd love to have seen what would have happened if he hadn't been in the team today. I think I know exactly what would have happened, that we would have been overrun. And he's massive, and he's such a presence as well. And we've never, over the last 4 or 5 years particularly, we've never had a player like that in the centre of midfield who you think, bloody hell, he's something.
Yeah, and also, I mean, when Elphick came on, we're down to those two centre-backs who were both 5'11", under 6 foot, so it's handy to have Jedinak in there, just for his height. And I think he's 6'2"?
9 foot, 11 inches, I believe.
He's a titan.
Another
game, the huge bastard. Another chap who is certainly starting to make sense, as in terms of why we bought him, is Albert Adomar, who the impact is there now. He's actually opening up defences and kind of coming in onto the back post as well from wide position when it's coming down the left. So would you say the last two games have really been his best performances so far?
Yeah, they've been the showcase, haven't they? And I thought against Brighton he was unplayable, absolutely unplayable. And it was the first time I thought we've got, and again today against Cardiff, where you think every time he gets the ball, his effort is and his work rate is phenomenal. But he's always looking to make that key pass, where it's different to Grealish. How Grealish will ponder maybe and think and try and play the clever ball. Adoma's really direct. Yeah. I think for the opening goal, wasn't it, with Codger headed him?
Yeah.
The first one he attempted to cross over, hits the defender, but it's straight back in there. And it's not, you know, it's, I make it sound simple by it being just a little chipped ball in, but it's right in the danger area where defenders don't want it. And that sort of stuff. We went months and years not creating any chances. This guy's perfect, absolutely perfect for it.
So you rate him more than like Tonef or somebody like that?
Oh,
it's a tough one.
It is. Let me just, I don't want to commit straight away on that answer. I think it's fair to say we've upgraded.
Sorry, that deserved a
Alexander Tonev. I mean, we don't need to dwell any longer than we need to on Tonev. But, I mean, I look back at the last time we played Cardiff. It's only 3 years ago. We had Tonev, Silla and Bowery in that team.
Yes. No, Tonev actually did play in that game.
You know, you think... And we wondered. We wondered why we weren't winning football matches. Although, ironically, we did win that game.
G'day, and welcome back to Jedinak's Jangle. Had you fooled for a while, didn't I? Turns out I'm a beast. Imagine how good I'll be when I'm not on my bloody own in this midfield. Well, what about this lean specimen emerging from the swamp? That's never a Gabby. He never used to miss a meal. Now he just misses chances instead. This Sheila's two tons of fat. What's that now? Talk about a blast from the past. A bloody Calderwood. At least it's one less pommy around here. But blimey, you've also got a feel for Westwood. still doing the mannequin challenge against Cardiff. Can't catch a break, the poor little ripper. But good on you, young Grealish Struth. We've got a real jackaroo on our hands. Just lay off those brewskis, mate. Big shout out to Alan Pardew. How's this one working out for you, matey? Ho ho ho, where's your Benteke now? And finally, I'd also like to say thanks to Neil Warnock for the wine. No one bottles it quite like you.
So, but in terms of the Cardiff game, even though we won, I thought probably the Brighton game was a bit more of an impressive performance, considering even though it was a draw.
No, I thought it was a 1-1 mauling, wasn't it, of Brighton?
I don't know if it was a mauling, but it was definitely like we it was, you know, like in boxing where you fight until the end to get the decision. I think, you know, and you're looking comfortable, you know you're not going to get knocked out or anything. It was kind of like that. And if it went on a decision, I think we would have won the points decision. There was just something just more solid about Villa. Mm-hmm. And, you know, let's be honest, apart from maybe Newcastle against St. James's Park, there's not a game where you feel like going into it,
no,
you're going to get beat.
No, I thought that was an interesting... No, we spoke about it because Brighton we sort of used as a... It was like a barometer almost of how well we're doing, because they're the team who look like they'll be the second or promotion candidate, if you like. And also, I mean, a lot of people refer to them as being like a really good team as well. I thought they were good, but...
I think we stopped them playing. I mean, you've got to go, when talking about their credentials, I mean, Norwich were one of the favoured teams. If not, they were the... I think at the start of the season, they were the second favourites to go up after Newcastle, and, you know, Brighton spanked them 5-0.
I can't believe how badly they've lost their way, actually, Norwich. I mean, they're eighth now.
Was it? Yeah, how many defeats have they had on the trot? It's quite considerable.
Yeah, they've just lost to Derby.
Yeah, but anyway, sorry, going back to Brighton. But yeah, Brighton, I think they were frustrated, and I think speaking to their fans after the game, they said they were pretty impressed with Villa, and they said we were the best team that had played at the Amex this season, visiting team, and also if they finished above Villa in the league, they would probably be promoted.
I would agree with that. I wouldn't aspire for it to be the outcome, though. I'd rather we were promoted.
Well, no, exactly. I think if they finished above, well, they can finish above us. They can finish us above us in the league
first,
and still not get promoted. And Villa get promoted if they finish above us in the playoffs, and then we kick their asses in the playoffs.
Oh, you do know that this is all set up for a Villa Blues playoff final.
Yeah, no, that's what I've been thinking. People have been mentioning it, and like I don't think Blues have got it to get that automatic spot. I don't think they've got the depth in their squad, but I think ultimately, I think they've got a good spirit about them that will keep them in the top six. Because let's face it, there's not that many teams, I think, in the division that are strong enough to go on a run and really trouble the top two places. I mean, Huddersfield have already shown that. Norwich have already shown that. And as for Brighton, as we've mentioned before in previous podcasts, their staying power has always been questionable in the last few seasons. I mean, doesn't matter how well they've impressed for the first three quarters, it seems their last quarter is always a bit dubious when it comes to the running.
Well, exactly, and I think that's got to give us hope because, you know, after such a sluggish start to the season, we've finally got ourselves together and find ourselves... only 3 points outside the playoffs, you know, next week.
4 points. Leeds played a later game and beat Rotherham.
How annoying.
It is. But we play Leeds next week and we can do something about that.
Exactly. I mean, the point stands that we're within touching distance now of, you know, potentially 1 or 2 weeks away from dictating our own destiny, I suppose. And we're on such a good run all of a sudden. And as you say, there's been no one, even... when Newcastle came to Villa Park, if you consider it our poorest at the beginning of the season, it wasn't a terrifying experience, was it? And no one's been or...
Well, it was in the first half for me. I was almost going to walk out at halftime. It was the most... It doesn't matter about Newcastle. Newcastle weren't that great because they'd have been 3 or 4 nil up at halftime.
And I think that's the point, really, that we've talked all season about many of these sides... You know, beating each other week after week after week, and there's this huge churn of clubs in the middle third of the division. We've got to rise above that, and we appear to be putting together a run now.
But even Newcastle, I mean, Blackburn beat them weekend. And
I can't believe that, to be honest. I really can't.
The problem is, though, with Newcastle is that they've got such a head start on Villa that it's difficult to see them. We're going, you know, they're going to have to lose five games? And we'd have to win five games for us to catch up on them.
Yeah.
And even though I don't think Newcastle are the finished article, I think that gap's too big to claw back unless we really go on a run and, you know, just don't lose again until the first game of the season in the Premier League next season.
I mean, there's a couple of things there. I suppose Newcastle didn't have to have such wholesale change like we did. I mean, we've had radical change. You know, we're almost unrecognisable to last season. And I don't think many Villa fans foresaw us being the top dog in the division either. I think given where we were at, even just a few weeks ago, the fact that we've managed to turn this big ship around and say, well, let's at least try and get into playoffs and people actually believe it. Well, that's, you know, the fact that people have got an aspiration to be challenging for something is progress.
Indeed. I think the good news is I think there's quite a few gears for Villa to go through yet. I mean, I mean, looking at the Cardiff and Brighton game, you know, we're still not firing on all cylinders by any means, but we're solid. You get the feeling now as a supporter that, you know, we're not necessarily going to lose a game or buckle. That kind of mindset's been reset. So now once those forward guys start to actually play together, I think, you know, we'll start, you know, hammering teams, hopefully.
We've got people like, I know he's not been available for the last couple of weeks, but we've got a player in McCormack who we haven't seen anything of yet. You know, he hasn't. I'm not saying he will necessarily come good. I hope he does. But it's something else that I'm sure many in the division would be envious to have in their squad, let alone as an option.
Well, I think he will obviously be an option in January.
Yeah, for sure.
Those other guys won't be around.
Nope.
Speaking of some of the other guys, Grealish. I think he's still got to do a lot more before he. You know, we even spend too much time talking about him, but I think he can definitely get a lot for Villa. I mean, let's be honest here, he's a bit like Ashley Young in terms of he does play for the foul at times.
Certainly.
And today, early doors, it looked like I think he dived for the early one, and then even the penalty, you knew he was looking for it.
Yeah. The thing about him, he's clearly got something, and he's...
Against Brighton, I think he looked good when he came on, especially in that more central role.
He's got something. There were two things. I mean, Brighton, I thought he was, when he came on, he was, you know, it was a game-changing performance over those few. They just couldn't deal with him. And today it was interesting because it was 50-50 for me. I think there was the 50% Ashley Young where you're rolling your eyes a little bit going, well, he could have just, you've beaten the man. Why are you throwing yourself on the floor? And he was definitely targeted, and you know, I know Warnock came out afterwards and saying, he's waving at the referee and going, you know, how many more times do I have to be fouled? He was kicked all over the park, and telling me that wasn't a tactic.
Yeah, no, I mean, obviously they're going to cut down
for sure,
especially when they saw him on the starting team sheet. Mm-hmm. They're going to make sure he has no room and hassle him. But the thing is, I mean, Grealish, I don't know, has he got to the point where he's used to it yet? I don't know, but he definitely knows it's coming, and I'm sure, you know, when people say, you know, a player dives and they get on a player, you know, a lot of the time the managers tell them to go down because, you know, it's a tactical advantage. You're winning a free kick or a penalty, and it's not just on the player's shoulders. He's sometimes following instructions.
It's a big reputational thing to shift once you've got it, though, because I mean, let's not beat around the bush. Ashley Young's got a reputation for diving, and the amount of free kicks and penalties we won where, I mean, Young used to do that thing where he almost cartwheeled someone, didn't he? And it was, you could see it coming, and you could almost read the play. I'd worry if Grealish built that into his game, because he's probably technically as good as Ashley Young. If maybe with a cleverer, you know.
I don't know. He hasn't actually done anything yet.
He hasn't.
Apart from score a couple of goals. So,
he hasn't, Ashley
Young, to his credit, has kind of proved himself, as you know, at Villa especially.
Oh, yeah, I'm not suggesting Ashley Young isn't and wasn't a great... I mean, he was a great player for us. I just think with Grealish has got something, a particular spark, I think, that if we can harness it... I mean, I don't want to sound like a complete Grealish fanboy, because I do think there are serious, and there have been serious, discipline issues with him. But this season's a big test for him because he's got an opportunity to develop outside of the limelight of the Premier League. You know, grow into a Villa squad that, you know, make yourself indispensable to the team. Especially when you've got players like Albert
Adoma. And this season is well up and running, so yeah. He needs to start. And I mean, he's a player that obviously needs goals in his game as well. And has he got a couple so far? I mean, he needs to be close to that double figures, I think, to really be reaping all this hype still.
Yeah, the one thing that sticks out for me about his play, and considering how important he can be as an attacking player for us, he can almost take the sting out of an attack, and that's something that's picked up by a few people. It almost like he slows it down and allows the opposition to regroup. And there was a couple of times today where you thought, when he first burst onto the scene, he was much more direct, and you know, the glimpses that we saw of him. And has that been coached out of him, or you know, he's still developing?
It's interesting you say that, because at this meeting with Steve Round earlier in the week, that's one of the things I was chatting to him about. Is we were talking about Westwood initially, also Tish Bowler, and you know, he was discussing about, we're talking about this culture of Villa playing sideways passes and playing it back, and it kind of not only frustrating the crowd, but also, you know, ultimately not getting the team anywhere on the pitch in terms of creation of chances. And, you know, we discussed Westwood for a bit and, you know, regarding confidence. And, you know, I cited Kevin Richardson, you know, the former Villa captain under Big Ron, as an example of the player we are missing, who, when gets the ball, turns and faces the opposition and, you know, gets attacks going, whether it's a short pass or, you know, a longer pass, it doesn't really matter, but it's just getting that movement forward. And he was talking about that Westwood isn't a player that takes the ball off the centre backs and then turns and then drives an attack and gets something going. And, you know, he was saying, Round was saying he was watching an Everton game on TV recently, and he was saying, you know, Drissa Gay doesn't do that. He doesn't pick the ball up from the centre back. If he gets a pass from a centre back, he'll probably pass it sideways or pass it back. It's not like he gets the ball, picks it up, turns round, and then drives. Mm. You know, these are players that have decent stats and pass completions and all that kind of stuff, but what these stats don't really show is like the purpose and what the end product kind of is. I mean, unless it's an assist. But no, I think, and the interesting thing, because we were talking about this a lot, and, you know, he said that Tish Bowler, you know, they stopped training and he got a bollock in for playing sideways pass, which seems to suggest it's a mentality that Bruce is definitely looking at to clamp down on. And also they'll probably have in mind to get a player in, maybe in the next transfer window or two, that is more of a driving force. Jedinak's not that guy. I mean, he's got a different role.
Well, that's the point that we need to establish a new identity and a new... It's a footballing culture, isn't it? You can see it through players like, you know, Adoma's a good example. Codger's a really good example of, you know, these are personalities, and they've got... Their only thought is to try and score a goal. And yeah. We need that midfield equivalent. You know, Jedinak's only thought when he's on the pitch is when that ball's anywhere near him is, I will win that. You know, the midfielder we need, and it's interesting that Westwood's being preferred over Gardner as well at the moment. I think that tells you a lot.
Somebody said Gardner had a broken finger in training or something.
Don't know.
I haven't investigated it, to be honest.
No, I don't know. And I think, strangely enough, I think Westwood's had two decent games. You know, he made the error.
Well, shall we? I mean, we were going to pick Westwood for the player focus. So shall we dwell on Westwood now and let him be the player focus of this episode?
No better time than the present.
Carry on then. What was you saying about Westwood?
Well,
old Ashley. Ashley Westwood.
Old Ashley. I think we need some appropriate piano music for this moment.
Now we begin the story of Ashley Westwood. He started off coming to Villa as our bright hope. He was going to be Lambert's talisman, his go-to guy. But then it all went sour. The boos came from the terrace. I'm completely ad-libbing here. Let's kill this music.
Nobody can tell.
Against Brighton, as Steve Round told me, my old mucker, Steve Round, apparently Westwood covered the most ground and ran the most out of any Villa player, which seemed to be something that he's been lacking in the past. And I think Round asked Westwood, you know, how did that feel after the Brighton game? And he, you know, Westwood said it did feel a lot more better. one thing that supporters do appreciate is effort. So if he's been told to run around and get stuck in and cover everything and track back and do this and do that, then the first thing that supporters notice is effort. I mean, just look at somebody like Alan Hutton, who, you know, he's not the greatest player in the world, but he puts the effort
in. You don't say.
He puts the effort in, and that gets him kind of a green light with the Villa supporters up to a point.
Yeah, to a degree, yeah.
Westwood, it's up to him. I mean, if he shows the effort, but also he's got to cut out the mistakes. As I said, yeah. You know, in that meeting, I said,
absolutely.
Pretty much every game, you'll notice him get shrugged off the ball. And mm-hmm. and that happened today, and it led to the goal. So I'm sorry, but the reality is, as I said, one of the issues with Westwood is an indication of where Villa have fallen, because I don't see him as, you know, he's not a Kevin Richardson, for example. He's meant to be the man that keeps everything ticking over in midfield, but I don't see him as that. I think he's got technical ability, but he needs confidence and he needs to apply it. But, you know, how long do you wait for him to come good all of a sudden?
Well, he's like a group, you know, a clutch of Villa players that come through, and you always think of them, oh, the young and up and coming, and he's not, and he's got years of Premier League experience as well. Really annoying thing for me with Westwood is he's, as you say, he's technically quite a good footballer. You know, he's but his decision making, the conscious decisions he makes to, like you say, I'm sure we're repeating ourselves, and many people have this same maligned debate about him, because no one arrives at Villa Park, I'm pretty sure of this, thinking, wanting to single out an individual footballer week after week after week. But like you said, the errors that he makes are so glaring that you think...
He doesn't help himself, does he?
He doesn't, and I do think the last two games, I thought the Brighton game he played really well and I didn't have any issues there, but I think today was a great case in point that he did a lot of running around. There wasn't a lot else going on in terms of, we talk about end product. But the thing that really sticks in my mind is that it was a horrendous piece of control that led to them getting in on goal when it was a gift. It was an absolute gift.
Let's freshen up the Westwood debate and let's see how high the bar is. Question: Ashley Westwood or Barry Bannon? See, the fact that you've actually paused and then had to think about that is the only answer I need. that is the litmus test, people. If you want to know if the midfielder's good enough, ask them the name of the player and Barry Bannon. Okay, we'll try it. Mile Jedinak or Barry Bannon?
Oh, that's a tricky one. That's like saying, can I have another side helping of Yakuba Silla, please? It's just not...
Okay, Yakuba Silla or Barry Bannon? See, it's a good test. Gareth Barry or Barry Bannon?
It's always obvious.
Play the game. Don't be an asshole,
Barry.
Yeah, but which Barry?
Oh no! This we could get this game out in the Villa Village before Christmas. Jordan Bowery or Libor Kozak.
But no, I think the Barry Bannon test is, if you're not above Barry Bannon, then you shouldn't be playing for Aston Villa. Because Barry Bannon's somebody you still think, well, he could be, what was his nickname? Villa's Messi?
I'm pretty sure I never referred to him as our Messi. I will double check my blog. But I mean, what the?
No, but he was Villa's Iniesta. That was it, Iniesta. He was Villa's Iniesta.
What?
But no, seriously, if, you know, if you ask me about Barry Bannon or Westwood, I'm thinking, well, but Barry Bannon, championship player.
Well, he's...
Ashley Westwood, championship player.
Yeah.
That's what you need to know.
That's all it is. It's the Peter Whittingham test, really, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah.
What's down to.
Yeah, maybe we can sell that in the Villa Village as well before Christmas. The Peter Whittingham game. Two for the price of one. You can get the Barry Bannon game and the Peter Whittingham game as well. To conclude, hold on a minute. It's up to you, Ashley. It's up to you, Ashley Westwood.
Listen, he'll enjoy his time at Wolverhampton when he's reunited with his father, with his former boss, Paul Lambert.
Yeah, watch out for the January transfer window coming to you in only a few weeks' time. Anyway, let's move on. I asked for questions for this podcast literally 10 minutes before we started recording. So, and when most fans were probably asleep as well. So, but we'll work with what we've got. And here's one. Who should be on the bench, Gabby or Hepburn Murphy?
I can't believe that Bruce is managing to rehabilitate Gabby. I can't. Gabby's lost a stone and a half.
Only eight to go.
He ran today. I saw him. I was there. He ran. I don't know what to... I want to see Hepburn Murphy.
I mean, how do you think I feel? I go all the way to Brighton, check out the team sheet, and he's starting.
Oh, yeah.
If the trains weren't cancelled every fucking minute at, thank you very much, Southern Rail, the trains weren't all cancelled, I might have got back on the train and come back to Birmingham. I've got to say at this point, thumbs up to the, is it Paul Barber, the Brighton CEO who sent...
Oh, yeah. He's left no doubt as to his views.
He sent Southern Rail a classic letter, which I've put on the website if you haven't seen it yet. But he's forwarded it on to the local MPs, the government. It's basically a real finger to them. Anybody who's lived in Brighton this year will know it's almost at melting point. The website's set up, there's groups set up, and they're almost going to war against those idiots at Southern Rail. Anyway, sorry.
Well, let's just pick up on that point, because he does obviously stick it into Southern Rail. But there was a key message there. 30,000 people left that stadium, and it caused them a major safety issue. You know, we're not talking... That was only because that was luck, as much as anything, as Brighton actually dealing with that they just left 30,000 people on a train. I mean, what?
I stuck around after the game for about an hour. And had Brighton friends, so we got into the hospitality bit and had a Brighton Balti pie and a beer. And half of the reason for doing that was we'll allow an hour's worth of trains to leave, and we can just stroll out, get the train, and we're in business straight away. And we got out there, and it was like Armageddon. Nobody had moved, and people were saying we'd been waiting an hour.
Ridiculous.
I was like, well, there goes my plan of circumnavigating the crowds. Anyway, sorry, you haven't answered the question. Gabby or Hepburn Murphy on the bench?
Oh.
Or Barry Bannon?
Now, this is the Bowery test. I've told you, this is the Bowery best. Bowery best. I can't believe I'm going to say Gabby. Am I something wrong with me? There is, isn't there? I should say Hepburn Murphy.
Gabby Abong-Lahore.
I'm on the basis that I can't believe we're congratulating him for losing a stone and a half. I mean,
it's like, yeah, well played, mate. You've been paid, how many? He's not getting paid that much, surely.
Apparently, he is.
I don't know about that. I mean, unless Fox is a complete idiot, which...
it was the Mirror.
But no, the fact that he's getting paid five figures and people are celebrating that he's actually lost a stone. And you shouldn't have a stone you should have like minimal body fat when you're a professional football player getting five figures a week. So, it's ridiculous.
I do think we've got to keep Gabby. Hepburn.
I mean, I watched Hepburn Murphy again against Norwich in the under-23s this week, actually, earlier this week. And it's still like watching a kid. And there was a moment where he was one-on-one with the keeper. And you're thinking here, and he had a defender on his back, and you're thinking, well, there's one or two ways this turns out a good scenario for Hepburn Murphy is A, he's got the strength to hold off the defender and then finish it, or B, he just burns him off because he's so fast and then scores. And what happened, the defender, while, Hepburn Murphy's in full flight, hustled him off and, tackled him and... that was it. And I just thought, well, there in a nutshell suggests that he's not going to be the man.
Yeah, he shouldn't be in and around.
In that situation, Gabby would have held the guy off but missed.
Yeah, I was about to say, I think I was one of a few people in the whole 10 today that when he got one-on-one with a goalkeeper, I was sort of thinking, maybe I'll just sit down now.
I mean, I felt exactly the same when I was saying, did people really expect him to score from that? I mean, for God's sake, I mean, we watched him when we recorded the last podcast and against Celtic in the under-23s, he had a penalty. And he's always had a problem with he's not been, never been the most cleanest of strikers, of balls. Have I got the words the right way around there?
I don't know.
But, he'll score a lot of goals where it comes off his shin or... And it kind of bobbles in. As for a natural striker, he doesn't finish with a plum, is what I'm saying.
Well, only Villa would have a striker whose main attribute isn't scoring goals. It's That's so Villa, isn't it, that we would do that? I mean, it boils down to two things. And the Brighton game was another instance where I think the Brighton defender gave the ball away and Gabby had a run on goal. And he didn't have that burst of acceleration that I would associate with Gabby. And that was the first time I thought, hang on a minute, that's your unique selling point, if you like, where you think, you know, he would have burned away from someone and, like you say, got a shot off and missed. But
I've been forgetting to mention the listeners' names who have asked these questions. That was Connor, AVFC underscore Connor on Twitter.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Here's a question, speaking of the under-23s. Donald Sage says, Grealish was great today, Baker started too, and Gardner has shown signs of progression finally this season. Is the woeful academy to first team conversion rate, which has been a key failure over the last few years, shocking when you take in consideration Premier winners like Cahill and Albrighton slipping by? Is it starting to turn? And what of the prospects like Sulman, Sellers, etc.? Who do we see continuing this progression? And how will they factor into the first team as we move forward? Well, Sellers has been injured. I think he just got back from... I think he started training at the start of this month. But I've seen the last two games of the under-23s and it's not a great situation at the moment. I think he even spoke to Round about this and that's something that, I mean, his remit is from kids, Villa kids, all the way up to the first team. So that's something he's obviously got to get back on track. But, you know, I looked at in those games I've seen in the last week or so, I can't see anybody stepping up. I mean... No. Andre Green, maybe, but he's got a long way to go still.
Mm-hmm. My take's sadly quite similar that we want to have a romantic view of our academy system, but we've followed Villa long enough to know that so few have come through. I mean, even from the two names that were given by the listener, that Cahill came through Sheffield Wednesday's academy system. He joined us at 16, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and I've mentioned this before, Gareth Barry's one that people often refer to, but he was actually from Brighton's academy system and joined us again at 16. So, and then you start on this list backwards, don't you, of Gabby, who you could probably consider to be one of the success stories, bizarrely, given what we just said. Baker may prove to be a success. And then you start thinking of the Moore brothers, who had all the talent in the world but came to nothing. And it goes on and on.
And that was in a good Villa youth team. I think they won the youth cup the Moore brothers.
Well, they beat a team, the opposing team was the Wayne Rooney Everton team, wasn't it? Where a number of players went on to achieve some good stuff.
So, it's a tricky one at the moment. I think it's kind of watched this space in terms of the development. I mean, I saw them in a under-21s in a pre-season game against Tamworth and, you know, they pretty much didn't lay a glove on Tamworth.
That is a concern. And I mean, my only real up close viewing of them recently was the under-23 game at Celtic. And I was very underwhelmed by what I saw. And the other thing about it is that competition is diluted with senior players who are trying to get fitness or whatever. So it's not a perfect test bed either, I don't think.
Yeah, although saying that, I mean, the Celtic under-23s looked, I mean, they had a couple of fringe first teamers in there, but it was mainly the kids, and they looked like probably one of the most cohesive units to play at Villa Park for a good few years.
Yeah, I suppose the thing that I was just trying to underline was that there was, I suppose, more in relation to the question, there was no one who I thought, God, I imagine we'll see him pretty soon in the pushing for a start place.
Exactly.
There was no one who you thought, God, who's that kid? You know, there was none of that.
And I think Hepburn Murthy, judging him on that Norwich performance, sorry, this is the under-23s again, I think he's more likely to be off to Rangers or wherever, whoever's after him. I mean, the fact that Gabby's back in the thinking means that's another forward. Yeah. And Berth gone, and there's McCormack still floating around, and then there's, you know, there's even talk of getting new players in, even on loan, just to cover the African Cup of Nations. So, I mean, just judging him on that moment where he was clean through and he had a defender on his tail, and he didn't burn him off, and B, just couldn't hold him up. And, you know, this is under 23 level, and if he can't hold this guy off, he's not going to hold anybody in the Premier League off if we get back up there. Next question, Carl Hewitt says, that winning feeling buzz. It's been a while. Is that a question or is that a statement? I'm not that buzz still. I think you've got to dig me out of a big hole.
Yeah. Well, Randy Lerner did dig us a big frigging hole, didn't he?
I think my buzzes relate to league table positions, I think. Of course, it's good to win games, but we're in the Championship, we're Aston Villa, and I expect to win games if you know what I mean. But once we get in that top six, then wins become wins. I mean, at the moment, we're just winning to try to get back to respectability, but yep. I want to be winning where we're shaping up to be promoted, which will be in a final against the Blues at Wembley, as we've already mentioned.
Ooh, that'd have been an interesting train journey down, wouldn't it?
Did you see the that report? Where did I read it? I think it might have been in the Mail, where there was like 70 odd Blues and West Brom fans waiting at some junction to take on the police escort of Villa fans back into town, but it got busted.
So the rivalry's alive and well then, ahead of the clash. They're obsessed, banding up against us.
Bed Blues looking pretty solid. I mean, to go to that pub team, Brentford, as they like to call themselves, and beat them 2-0. I mean, that's hopefully what we'll be doing, but maybe hopefully doubling that score, because after all, it is a self-proclaimed pub team. A bit early to be talking about it, but I would just like to see Villa Blues in the Wembley final, just for the shenanigans it causes for everybody, the police,
could you imagine?
Wembley.
Could you imagine? I mean, how would you do it? How would you...
I remember my Liverpool fan friend, and I think it was one season, I don't know, last 10 years, that Manchester United and Liverpool were on to potentially play, I think, in the Champions League final. Kept on winning. I can't remember what season. Were they both in the semi-finals? I can't remember. But I was like, well, it would be, you know, great for United to go through because, you know, what a final, what a game for, you know, British football, blah, blah, blah. But he preferred them not to go through from the point of view that he couldn't bear losing against them in such a final. But I think that's a pussy reaction. I want, if we're going to play anybody in the Wembley playoff final, I want it to be the Blues.
Oh, that would be...
And I'm talking about, you know, I'm taking the risk that you've got to take risks in life to get the ultimate fulfillment. And that would be, you know, within the context of this league, who better to beat at Wembley in the playoff final than the Blues?
What better way to get promoted?
Well, exactly. I mean, it's a win-win scenario, not approaching it like, well, if there's any team I don't want to get beat at Wembley, it would be the Blues.
To be honest, I take the view that, I mean, I think they'll go up automatically, but I think my nightmare scenario would be against Newcastle, actually.
But that'd be good as well. That'd be a good day out.
Oh, no, no. Just think of all the bed sheets and the... cost a fortune. Absolute fortune.
Well, it would be a funny one, actually.
Mickey Quinn would be jabber the hutting it away somewhere.
Yeah. Anyway, so let's look at the what else has been happening in the Championship. Well, the good news is Newcastle lost. Yeah. Speaking of Mickey Quinn's team,
yeah.
At the moment, I don't think that really impacts on us, but but still, long term goals it might come into play later on if they carry on the odd slip up. The alarming decline of Norwich has been interesting because they were kind of a benchmark. I think if Villa were ever going to finish automatic promotion spot, you'd have to finish above Norwich. And at the moment, I don't think that's going to be that hard.
Well, they're slipping away and their manager got the dreaded vote of confidence, didn't he? So
he's almost getting into Alan Pardew territory at the moment.
Now it's time for Twitter with Tony. November 13th. I think it's even more important for FA to set up some fair play rules or policies to protect clubs cultivating young players and FFP rules. November 25th.
I only know two Murphys. One's famous Hollywood comedian, the other is our future star, Redburn Murphy. But footballers are not living by mouth. November 26th. I asked Steve to pick me to play for one game. November 21st. Happy birthday, Villa. UTV.
Moving on to the next game against Leeds United, that mighty force who nobody wants to replicate in terms of sticking around the swamp that is the Championship if you don't play it right and if you don't bully enough teams to and take away their assistant managers and best players. You end up being, but Leeds looking a bit better this season. They're fifth at the moment, 4 points ahead of Villa, so I've only got one goal at Elland Road, and that's to win.
Yeah, they fall into the category of teams that I think if we've got aspirations to go up, then this is the kind of game you've got to win.
Newcastle sorted out pretty swiftly against them at Elland Road, so I think we have to be looking to do the same thing.
Got to go there. I know that Elland Road can be quite a hostile place to go, but having seen what we did at Brighton, I think if we went there and applied the same sort of, you know, relentless, particularly I think how we played in the second, later stages of the second half at Brighton, I'd like to think we'd have enough to at least threaten to win. I think priority for me, don't lose your away games. Don't go there and lose. But to win there would be a real statement, I think.
Yeah, I mean, and it's a statement I would like to have made at Brighton, but in terms of the short term of promotion places, Leeds are there at the moment, we're not. It's a pivotal game. If we win this, and then we're suddenly right in the thick of it, of the promotion places. And supporters will feel like suddenly we're in a promotion race again. Not again, for the first time. Well, Graham Taylor.
I was thinking about this earlier. It's weird that looking at the top half of the table, not having to wait for the set, you know, like they stick it up on the TV or something. It caught me off guard.
Luckily, we're not kind of on teletext days where you would have to wait, was it like a minute for the second page. Good God, imagine being a Villa fan like we are now, and we had the technology of like 10 years ago. A lot of time are wasting there. Just looking at Leeds, what's got them into the playoff positions at the moment?
Good on the counter.
Yeah, I mean, Leeds have lost 7, won 9, drawn 2, and lost 7. So they look like a 50-50 team. I mean, come on, when your goal difference is, you're fifth in the league and your goal difference is +1. It goes to show we should be beating them. Now, I think when you look at Birmingham being a place above them, Birmingham are a better team than Leeds. I mean, Birmingham have only been beaten 3 times this season, so they're a lot more solid than Leeds. So I would say going to the Blues and going to Brighton's grounds were tougher propositions, probably.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And I'd just stand by what I said before. I think if we're only going to get into the top six by winning football matches, and, you know, Leeds are there, we've got to catch them as it stands. I think the momentum feels like it's starting to be with us as well. You know, you talk about... If you're looking at that league table now and you're looking over the last 5, 6, 7 matches and you're in those playoff positions, you know, who would you want to be at the moment? Would you want to be Norwich or would you want to be Villa? Would you want to be Huddersfield? Would you want to be Villa?
No, there's nobody else I'd rather be.
You got some appropriate music for that? Yes.
There's nobody I'd rather be. Yeah, no. I think we've got the momentum, I agree. And speaking of momentum, let's have a look at the 5 reasons to be cheerful. Is momentum going to be one of them?
Yeah.
Kind of a feeling of resurgence, would you say that's momentum?
Just years of
this is number one.
Of waiting for us to be relegated and to be... We haven't been on the hunt for anything since the O'Neill days, where you're thinking, you know, we had that one season under O'Neill where he really threatened to break into the top four.
Yeah.
But since then, in terms of, you know, over a domestic campaign, this is Villa on the hunt now, and that's got to... I wouldn't say I've got the buzz yet. I would agree with you, I haven't got the buzz yet.
Yeah, I haven't got the buzz.
I think I've got an interest in seeing how this pans out, and I'm it does feel like a changing mood.
Yeah, I mean, somebody put on social media the league table when Spurs last beat Chelsea at Stamford Bridge, and Villa were second.
That's telling.
Two games in hand to Liverpool, and I think they were 1 point behind. And this was actually a crucial time in the season. I think we got beat 3-0 by Spurs, and then Wimbledon or somebody, and we signed Tony Cascarino, and that kind of fucked it all up. But that team, that was when I was buzzing. That team was one. The Ron Atkinson team was another. You can identify with it. I can't identify with something that was so toxically bad in the last few years as Villa have been. I mean, there was nothing apart from the name and the colours of the kit that were left from the team that I used to support. But just looking at that table, I thought, yeah, I remember the enthusiasm I had for that team, and that it was, it was something other clubs kind of respected as well, because we've lost a lot of self-respect over the last couple of years, and it would be good to get that back. Absolutely. By thumping teams, and one of them I've got on my list is to go to Brentford and beat them about 5-6-0.
Pup team.
We're only saying this because this Brentford fan who has a Brentford podcast obsesses with Villa fans calling them the pub team, when I think maybe like two people on social media called them a pub team. But if that's what they want to be called, we'll go with that. So number two, I think Bruce's unbeaten run, and I mean, we're only talking in the context of the championship here, and because that's the here and now. But I think he's taken this practical, systematic approach of just ironing out all the weaknesses and the bad things about Villa on a week-to-week basis, and getting us up to a point where we can actually start thinking about becoming the team that we've, I've just mentioned, like the Graham Taylor team, for example.
Mm-hmm. I'd agree with that. He's a proper football manager, and
there's kind of old school as well.
He's old school, and I think if there's one thing about the modern game I don't enjoy and don't like is the needless complication of football. Of you've already mentioned burying the game in stats and why someone should be interpreted as good because no, actually I trust my eyes and I trust the results really.
Yeah,
just one example today when we'd conceded and managed to get ourselves back ahead just before half time. We conceded, we gave the ball away and gave Cardiff a chance just before the whistle. And Bruce was going insane because it was, because everything they got today, Cardiff, really, was because of our ineptitude. Something stupid that we did that led, like I think Ayoub got dispossessed needlessly in the centre circle, yeah, in the second half, for instance. Stuff like that. And that must infuriate a manager. And it's good to see that Bruce, like you say, he's set us up to be solid at the back and to hit teams. I don't think it's necessarily pretty all of the time, but he's paid to get results and he's getting them.
Number three, reason to be cheerful this week. What do you think?
Quite simple. Calderwood coming to the club. That's a big turn up for the books,
already been. He's already been at the club.
Yeah, but he's back. But he's back.
He's
I don't
better,
know what it means.
Back. He's better. He's back.
He's not trying to play football with no knees as he was.
But Round and Bruce seem to rate him highly. And I mean, obviously, most supporters' opinion on this is just based on the fact that he was assistant manager of a team that was second in the league. Mm-hmm. And it's about as far as it goes. So, obviously, he's come because he sees, I think, Dr. Tony's money and the money they've been throwing around is attractive to.
Really?
I mean, certainly Round mentioned it. Maybe he's been sold that the scope of the project is big. Obviously they worked with him before. Mm-hmm. If I was Brighton, I would be pissed off. Chris Hughton was pissed off. I mean, it's one of those, if it's on, it's a bit like Ron Atkinson saying, oh, I'm staying at Sheffield Wednesday, I'm never going to go anywhere, and then the next day signing for Villa as the new manager. It's one of those, it depends which side of the fence you're on. If you're on if you're a victim or...
Well, football's just a huge, Ponzi scheme for this sort of thing, isn't it? Because it's no different to, if by some strange quirk that Bruce and Calderwood are wanted by Man United, they'll go to Man United. It's, and there'll be nothing that Villa can do about it. This is just Villa doing on the basis that we can, like you say, sell the dream to someone and probably give them a big pile of money as a sweetener in the interim.
Right, number four.
Seeing the Holt End full against Cardiff?
Yeah, it was. There's still a lot to be done with the Holt End in terms of what it could be when you look at the yellow wall of Dortmund. And I think Villa are missing a trick there. It could be the best in the league, hands down. and do something a bit different as well. But for another time to discuss that. But yeah, no, before, I mean, some of the wings were empty, but it was looking a bit more solid against Cardiff. It's probably all those Cardiff fans that got into the whole 10 today. Right, number five. Well, I think we just keep mentioning this while it's still going, and hopefully it'll continue to the end of the season, but we're still unbeaten at home. The only side in the division. And we'll mention this hopefully as one of the reasons to be cheerful after every home game.
Yes, yes. In contrast this to the weeks and weeks and weeks over the last few years where we've been coming with little or no hope that we would even win or have a shot.
Yeah.
And the fact that we're, you know, yeah, it's...
Let's remember, we were having, as you rightly point out, we were having games and quite a few of them where we didn't even have a shot on target.
Game after game.
And what is football if it does not have shots on target?
That's Paul Lambert. Oh, where is he? Oh, he's at
Good
Wolves.
Luck, Wolves. In terms of this top six, do you think we'll be there? We've got how many games? We've got a bunch of games in December. I mean, it's pretty crazy. How many have we got? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Winnable games.
It's a few tough away games, but Norwich, Leeds, but Norwich are spinning downwards. QPR with Holloway in charge won't be that easy, but put it this way, there's enough games there. If we sort ourselves out and remain unbeaten, we should be in the top six by the end of those. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean,
so I'm going to put it out there, I expect to be top six by the turn of the year
minimum, or sack Bruce.
Minimum. And because I say we're going to be top six at the end of the year, that means it's going to happen. So you should subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. Make sure you give us stars, lots of them, and all that kind of stuff. And also, tell your friends about this podcast. Why don't you?
Yeah.
If you enjoy it, and a lot of people seem to enjoy it, I think they, because they're your friends, they should also deserve to enjoy it as well. So save some money on Christmas presents, and instead of buying them a present, just tell them about this podcast. Also, there's going to be an extra cost of this podcast if we keep going, which we want to obviously do, and that's going to be like $20 a month. Now is a good time to become a My Old Man Said patron, because at the moment that's one way of funding it. So go to the website myoldmansaid.com and check out the patron link, and you know, just a dollar a month, because it's an American company that run this, so it's gonna, what's that gonna cost you, about 80 pence or something a month. But yeah, if we get a few more people doing that, then that helps. So until next time, it's goodbye from me, and it's goodbye from him.
Goodbye.
Gotcha.
My old man said.
And joining me on the show is Dan Rogers from the Villa Underground. Welcome, Jan. Jan.
Welcome, Javert.
Hello. Well, this is the show, so you're not allowed to say Z.
No, shit. What a pair of piss out.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.